Hello, kiddies. Fall has fallen, and fall means the Wicked Library Halloween special is nearly here. It will be recorded live in front of a captive audience at Rickett and Beagle Books on October 17th from 7 to 9 p.m., and the show will air on October 31st, Halloween in other words. It's also going to be getting cold in our little village of the damned. So, in addition to the great prizes, tricks and treats, and other wicked fun, we're doing a little something we're calling blankets and books. Bring a clean used blanket to sit on for story time, and then leave the blanket before you're released. I mean before you go. Rickett and Beagle Books will be donating a book along with every blanket collected. Both items will be donated to the Hot Metal Bridge Faith community to distribute to the homeless. We hope you'll come by, but if you absolutely can't shamble down and still want to donate a blanket and maybe even a book of your own, drop me a line at librarian@thewickedlibrary.com and we'll get you more information. See you at Rickett and Beagle Books on the 17th, kiddies!
Mr. Librarian said I could say hello and tell you to come visit me at victoriaslift.com sometime. My building may be old and dark, but it's a lot of fun. There are 9 floors, and each one takes you to a very different place. I think you'll be surprised by just where my lift can go. Most people can't find it, but you will. I'm waiting for you. I think you'll have a lot of fun here too. Unless you make the wrong choice.
Today's episode of The Wicked Library is an encore performance of episode number 415. Featuring remastered audio and a brand new interview with Miracle Austin. The Wicked Library is brought to you by HorrorMade.com. From horror haikus to author and filmmaker interviews to original art and dark fiction reviews, HorrorMade.com has a terrifyingly fun collection of dark things that are sure to delight. Also brought to you by Shadows at the Door. Shadows at the Door is an ever-growing collection of haunted stories inspired by the ghastly, the ghoulish, and the macabre. You can enjoy the pleasing terrors and similar content at shadowsatthedoor.com. Also brought to you by Sanitarium Magazine. Sanitarium Magazine showcases original horror fiction and dark verse alongside news, reviews, and interviews. Sanitariummagazine.com.
Warning, the Wicked Library contains adult themes, adult situations, adult language, and graphic depictions of terror, bloodshed, the occasional possession, and your future trips to your psychiatrist, so he or she can assure you it's only a story. This podcast is intended for mature audiences only. You've been warned, kiddies. Hello, kiddies. Have a seat and relax. I'm your librarian. There's nothing to be afraid of, yet. Hold on to yourselves, boils and ghouls. This is going to be a dark ride. We'll leave the lights on for now. No talking. It's story time at the Wicked Library.
The Meat Lovers Special. For 60 seconds, Dash contemplated driving away from her life and never looking back. Instead, she threw her sweater onto the driver's leather seat and slid down. The steering wheel burnt her fingers upon touch. She jerked them back. She popped in the car key, turned over the ignition, and pressed the air conditioner button to full blast. The torturous Texas heat barely allowed for cool air to tickle her face. She scooted in her seat, peeling her dress from the back of her sweaty thighs, which felt like sticky flypaper. Her phone chirped. Dash reached behind her back seat to hunt for it in her stuffed purse. Her purse tumbled onto the floor, spilling all contents, cosmetics, and a .38 special. She found it after the third ring and placed it on speaker. "Hey, babe, I'm on my way home. I'll start the stakes as soon as I jump in the shower," Jeremy, her fiancé, said. "What? Don't tell me you forgot that Vince and Stacy were coming over tonight." "Yeah, I guess I did," as she reached back with her right hand to throw all the contents back in her purse. "Be home as soon as I can." The call ended. Dash shifted the car in reverse, sped out of the driveway, and drove toward the market to retrieve two T-bone steaks, a bag of salad, baked potatoes, red wine, cheese cubes, crackers, pound cake, fresh strawberries, and glaze. When she arrived home, she saw Vince and Stacy walking toward the front door. Dash pushed the yellow garage door button on a panel above her and drove in. She hopped out of the car, throwing her purse over her shoulder while scooping the paper grocery bags into her arms, and leapt toward the back door. Without paying any attention to the one bag with the red wine, it gave way. The bottle dropped and splattered onto the kitchen floor as soon as she opened the door. Jeremy heard the noise from the living room, where he was entertaining Vince and Stacy. "Hey, you guys, I'll be right back. I think Dash needs some help." "Sure, we'll serve through Blue Flicks," Vince replied, grabbing the television remote from the coffee table. Dash was kneeled down on the floor, picking up the large broken glass pieces from the floor and wiping up the red wine with towels she pulled from the shelf next to her off the floor, as fast as she could. "Jeremy, I'm so sorry about the wine. I'll run back to the market and pick up another bottle." "Never mind." Stacy brought over a bottle. "Why do you always mess things up?" he whispered, pinching Dash hard under her right arm. "Ouch, Jeremy, you're hurting me. Let go." She jerked her arm back from him while staring down at her purse on the floor. He shrugged his shoulders. "You would just do what I asked and things would be perfect. I told you to pick up the groceries earlier this week." "Honey, I'm sorry. What else do you want me to say?" "Toss me those damn steaks so I can put them on the grill for Vince and me. Wait until later. Don't think I'll forget about this little stunt." Dash rushed through the bedroom, peeled out of the sweaty work clothes, jumped in the shower for a quick wash-off, dried herself, and threw on a backless white summer dress. She then slipped on white tennis shoes. She dropped two drops of Visine in both eyes, popped an Ativan in her mouth, and took a few deep breaths. She walked back into the kitchen to prepare the salad, cheese crackers, and dessert. "Hey, Stacy. Hey, Vince," she said. Stacy and Vince walked up to the island and hugged her. "So good to see you guys. It's been a while. You look great," Stacy shared. "Thanks. We've been so busy with work and wedding planning," Dash said. "Hey, Vince, grab us some beers from the fridge," Jeremy yelled out as he poked his narrow head through the sliding door to scan the room like a military laser before exterminating its target. "Dash, I thought you were going to wear the brown outfit." "Oh, it makes me look fat, Jeremy. I thought this one looked better, see?" She half-twirled. "Vince, Stacy, come on out and enjoy some music and beer outside. Wine's in the cooler," he said. "Sure, come on, Stacy," Vince said, grabbing the beers from the fridge and placing under his arms as he shoved Stacy out with his body. They walked outside and sat down in the cushioned chairs. Jeremy stormed back in and shut the door behind him softly. Dash's hands began to quiver like being submerged into freezing water. Jeremy turned six shades of red within seconds. "Why are you always challenging me?"
I wasn't, Jeremy. I thought this would be a better choice for the occasion."
His hands rested on his hips. The back of his right hand swung towards her mouth faster than any baseball pitcher's fastball.
Blood droplets exploded from her mouth and flung onto the front of the fridge. She fell down to the floor, pulling the salad on top of her. He stooped down next to her. "Now, you have to change. Put on what I told you. Hurry up. Our friends are waiting for dinner. Clean this mess up, and you too." He scooped up the baked potatoes. She grabbed a dish towel, held it to her mouth, pressed down gently, and shuffled to the bathroom to change into the khaki, baggy pantsuit. Dash stared up in the mirror, unzipping her stained dress. Thick tracks were painted under her eyes, left from her running black eyeliner. She wiped her running nose with the back of the hand towel resting on top of the wood counter. The water faucets were turned on slowly to rinse her face. She then sat down in her vanity chair and opened up a drawer, where over a dozen hospital emergency room ID plastic bracelets covered up her makeup. She shoved them to one side, picked up the tube of concealer makeup and squeezed a quarter size onto her fingertips and blended it around her mouth. The concealer powder came next with a few dabs of neutral gloss onto her lips. Dash re-entered the kitchen, swept up the salad off the kitchen floor, and wiped the blood off the fridge's door with paper towels dipped in warm soapy water. She opened up the fridge and rummaged through. Luckily, she found a half head of lettuce, two plump tomatoes, and a few carrot sticks in the back of a drawer. A second salad was prepared. She walked out onto the patio with a tray where the salad bowl, dressings, and cheese crackers rested. "Okay, you guys, let's begin," she said. "Hey, why'd you change, Dash? Your dress was so lovely," Stacy said. I spilled something on it." She stared down at the grass. "You okay, Dash?" Stacy asked. "Yeah, just a tough week. Here, have some salad." They all sat down to eat while Dash served the salad. "Jeremy, my man, you know how I love my steak. Just enough grilling to knock that chill off. I love mine warm and bloody. I just don't get it how our girls are vegans," Vince said with a stuffed mouth. "Yeah, me too, man. It's not like a juicy steak in a cold one." A few drops of blood ran down the side of Jeremy's mouth and down his hairy arms. Stacy looked at Dash from across the table as she nibbled on her salad and baked potato, mostly scooting the food around her plate with a fork. After dinner, they all went back into the house to watch a movie and to have dessert and wine. Dash cleaned up as she listened to her favorite jazz station. Stacy walked into the kitchen to help her. "Stacy, I got this. Please enjoy the movie." "It's too loud and the movie switched to football. You know how it goes." "Is there something wrong, Dash?" "Nothing. Why do you ask?" She scrubbed the plate with a dish towel repeatedly without looking up at her. "It's written all over your face, Dash." "I'm just tired." "Okay, if you say so. I'm just gonna keep bugging you till you tell me." Suddenly, a breaking news report interrupted the station. "Emergency, emergency. If you have purchased any beef products from Jay's Grocery, Emma's Market, or K&M Whole Foods, then please throw out immediately. All meats contaminated. Repeat, throw out. Please call 1-800-800-8000 for more information." "Oh my gosh, Dash, where did those steaks come from?" Stacy asked as her knees began to wobble. She slid down into the bar stool. Dash slowly walked over to the trash can. She lifted up some plastic bags with tossed salad on top and found the white paper where the steaks had been wrapped in. She turned it over. It read, "Emma's Market." She dropped it to the floor. "Give me the phone, Stacy," Dash commanded without blinking. Dash dialed the number. A rep answered. "Hello, I just heard the news report on the radio about the contaminated beef. My fiancé and his friend just consumed steaks super rare from Emma's Market." "Listen, you need to get out of the house now," the rep yelled. What? Why? What's it contaminated with? Dash asked frantically. That's not important. Get out now. You may have less than 15 minutes with consumption before... The rep replied, breathing hard and stuttering into the receiver. Please, tell me, what is it contaminated with? Before what? Ma'am? Ticks were genetically engineered with a lethal flesh-eating virus in a lab a few months ago, about 60 miles from your location. Somehow they escaped and fed on a pasture of cattle. Those same cattle were unknowingly slaughtered and packaged into those stores listed from the announcement. So you're telling me that my fiancé and our friend are going to eat me like in those silly zombie movies? Yes, that's exactly what I'm trying to tell you. Listen, whoever consumed the contaminated meat will transform into a mad human and feeding zombie with no memory of anything or anyone. I got your location and a special termination squad will be headed to your home address soon. I can't believe this. Believe it, sister. You really need to leave. Get out of there while you still can, the rep demanded. The phone call dropped with an irritating, dreadful buzz. Dash repeated everything to Stacy. Stacy, we need to go now. I'm not leaving, Vince. Someone's playing an awful joke, that's all, Dash. None of it's true. It's just a big fat hoax to scare us on the radio. Remember that radio segment years ago by that famous guy that caused panic to so many listeners? This is the same thing. Stacy whined. Come with me, Stacy. I really think the rep is telling the truth. Anyhow, I almost didn't come home today. I was going to leave Jeremy for good. I know this is my out. What? Stacy, I didn't want to tell you, but he's been battering me for months. Dash, are you sure? Yes, I think I would know. Well, he doesn't mean to hurt you. Vince has hit me too, but not lately because I know what irritates him now. Men get angry and this is how they react. It's normal. You just have to figure out the things you do to cause Jeremy's irritation and stop doing those things. He's always telling Vince how the two of you were meant to be together. Are you kidding me? You think what Vince has done to you is forgivable? I should listen? Of course. Vince is a good man. He works hard. So is Jeremy. Give him another chance. They don't mean it. It hurts them just as much, Dash. No. I can't believe this. Tonight was it for me. Come with me, Stacy, please, before something really bad happens. I can. Stacy hugged her. Dash grabbed her purse off the counter and pulled out the 38 special. Here, take this at least. Dash attempted to hand it over to her. Stacy pushed it away, hugged Dash, and walked back into the living room. Hey, you guys, what are you two doing? Stacy asked nervously. Vince and Jeremy were hunched over on all fours behind the couch as their bodies flinched again and again. Stacy walked over to them with her arms pressed against her sides, touching her mini ruffled skirt. Her legs shook like jello. Within seconds, their heads cocked backwards, like a gun trigger. Thick yellow drool ran from their mouths. Their eyes widened and transformed into bright iridescent lenses. Their incisors protruded out and fixed themselves on her voluptuous thighs. Dash was already in the car, backing out of the garage and driving toward a black van parked in front of the house. She heard Stacy scream twice and saw quick shadows move across the living room bay window. Bold white initials were printed on the side of the van, which read ZT, with Zombie Terminator spelled out underneath. The driver scanned a luminous lime-green light at Dash's eyes and waved her on. She drove past her house for the last time.
Stay tuned for a short Q&A with the author in just a moment. Today's episode featured a story by Miracle Austin, Meat Lovers Special. If you'd like more information on Miracle and her work, please visit MiracleAustin.com and follow her on Twitter at MiracleAustin7. That's the number 7, folks. Artwork for today's show was created by Jeanette Andromeda. If you'd like more information on Jeanette and her work, please visit HorrorMade.com and follow her on Twitter at Horror_Made. Also, do be sure to stop by thewickedlibrary.com/BS4-1 for some very cool bonus art for today's episode. Big thanks to John Towers for a great story last week, and also for the kick-ass art. That's right, folks, he did both, the art and the story, because John is an artist and a hell of a writer. Don't forget to visit our sponsors, shadowsatthedoor.com, rickertandbeaglebooks.com, horrormade.com, and sanitariummagazine.com. Please, share the terror. Share the show. Help us grow. Tell a friend, or maybe that guy at the butcher shop that enjoys his job just a little bit too much. Aside from that, the best support you can give us is to rate us in iTunes, Stitcher, and tune in wherever you listen to the show. Ratings are free, and they mean a lot to us. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter to get great prizes, bonus content, and more. Sign up at thewickedlibrary.com. And now, Miracle Austin. Today, my guest is Miracle Austin, and we just finished with your story, Meat Lovers Special, which was a fantastic, fun little story.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. It's one of my favorites, and whenever Nelson and I decided we were taking a break for a few weeks here, obviously we never like to let the show just go dead, so we play best of episodes, and I think it's always a challenge to try to pick best ofs, because to me, pretty much every show that we do is a best of. Yeah. I really enjoyed this story because not only is it a scary story, not only does it have some great dialogue and some great action, but I thought that it dealt with a topic that is an important topic, violence and domestic abuse and the way that those relationships happen.
Yes.
Did you do a lot of research for that aspect of it?
Well, you know, Dan, I worked at a local domestic violence shelter for probably almost 7 years. So I heard a lot of stories, read a lot of stories, you know, in various police reports, and also personal experiences from my mom's past relationships. So I kind of just took all of that together, and I just took what I needed to help me create that story.
Yeah.
So definitely indirect and direct experiences.
Yeah, that you have my sympathy for the situation with your mom, and you know, my thanks for your help with the ladies that have been through those situations. It's always tough when you deal with a subject like that, because I think the concern for some authors and the danger is you get this feeling that maybe you're trivializing real world experiences.
Yes.
And I see that differently, because I think that anything that brings attention to the topic, and it's one of the nice things about fiction, is it's a safe place to explore these topics that are very difficult and loaded, and I think sometimes difficult to talk about, you know, straightforwardly.
Yes, I agree. You said that very well, Dan. Thank you.
Oh, well, you're welcome. So how did you, I mean, obviously I'm sure that was a concern when you were writing the story, is I want to have a story that deals with this. It's something that can be a powerful and impactful story. One of your concerns probably was trying not to trivialize it and trying not to sensationalize it for the purposes of the story. How did you do that for yourself?
Oh, that's a tough question. Oh my goodness. I think the way I tried to handle that the best way was just kind of trying to get inside my character's mind and just her life experiences, where she was and what she was trying to do, and just didn't know how to do it. And so when this opportunity popped up, she just went with it.
Yeah.
Just really listening and trying to tune in to different stories that I've heard just throughout my life so far. I just tried to take little pieces and mold it into the story that I created.
And I think you did a wonderful job with that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. One of the things I can tell you from my experience, and my wife and I were in the process of adopting a child at one point, and we went through this educational class and learning what the kids go through, what the families are like, and obviously not to the extent of spending as much time as you did with these women that have suffered this type of situation. But one of the things that I picked up on, there's like this justification process that occurs for the victim, and as well as for those that are in similar situations where they almost excuse the behavior of the abuser.
Exactly. So very true. Almost become immune to it. It becomes the norm.
Right.
So definitely.
It's tragic enough whenever it's the victim that's doing it to themselves. But in your story, you have an enabler in a different relationship that's coming along and basically trying to convince her, you know, hey, this is all fine. And does that happen a lot in your experience?
You know, I've seen it and I've heard it. I haven't seen it a lot, but definitely you have those individuals who will enable and try to make it sound that everything's going to be okay. And that's more damaging than helpful. And sometimes I don't even think they know what they're doing, honestly. Yeah.
To me, that's the part that's the most surprising when that occurs, because you would think your friend would be like, hey, you need to get out of this relationship. But I guess because she's in a similar type of relationship.
Exactly. That's right. So you hit it. You hit the nail right on the head.
And I don't know whether this was deliberate or not, but I kind of figured that the way that the story ends, where you have these men that they're truly now things that can't help what they do. They have no memory of the past or the people around them. They're obviously at this point zombified, and they're just destructive, uncaring, unthinking. And there's a scene that occurs before that where Stacy says to Dash, you know, they can't help it. It's just the way they are. And at the very end, you actually make that happen because they become these creatures where they truly can't help what they do.
Exactly. Yes, and I did that on purpose. I just want that to be reinforced in that way. So I did. I purposely did that.
I thought it was very clever because, I mean, on one hand, you have something where they truly cannot help what they do. And when you compare that to when they're normal and, you know, they're just being abusive, they obviously can help what they're doing. They just make that choice not to.
Exactly. Yes, so true. So very true, Dan.
So that's why I picked your story, is because it was such a short little tale comparatively, and there's just so much psychology and other stuff going on in it that I just was fascinated by that.
Wow, that really means so much to me, Dan, because I tell you, when I wrote it, you know, sometimes when you write, you don't always think what impact, if any, it's going to have on someone. And so just to hear that just means so much to me. And I feel like that's what I was intending to accomplish. And just for you to validate that for me, it really means a lot. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome.
It does.
I spend a lot of time, like you as a writer, you tear stories apart, and it's very difficult. I've had this conversation with other writers before where, you know, you get to this point where it's difficult to be surprised. You'll watch a story unfold and you're like, well, this is the next thing that's going to happen because this is the way that it should happen. And you structured your story really well where I didn't pick up on what was going to happen.
Wow. That's great. I just love hearing it. You just have no idea.
I think the second layer to that is, you know, for the casual reader that, you know, maybe doesn't spend as much time as we do, like dissecting stories and tearing them apart, the way that you structured the story and what we were talking about with like the comparison between the way they are before and the way that they are after and the whole theme there, I think it almost hits you on a subconscious level because the few people that I've talked to that recently I've had listened to the story as I was getting ready for, you know, revamping it and putting it back out, have all said that there's just something about it that drags you in. And it's a very compelling tale. So I think you succeed very well on a couple of different levels there.
I tell you, that really makes me feel so good about that. That really does. Oh my gosh. I'm blown away a little bit. I'm a little speechless.
Well, you should. It's really a good story. It's a good story.
Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
It really means a lot. It absolutely does. My goodness.
So tell me what your normal process is whenever you're putting together a story like this. I mean, I know each story kind of is its own individual creation, and it all works a little bit differently. But do you have a normal process when you're getting ready to write a story, when you feel the urge to put something down on paper?
Well, you know, Dan, what I've done and what I've been doing, every time an idea hits me, I usually will write it down, you know, in my phone under notes, or I'll keep a little journal with me, because I just never know when an idea is going to spark. And then I just kind of brainstorm, and I just start pulling, you know, different words together and different ideas, and it just starts becoming sometimes it just kind of starts creating a life of its own. I'm like, okay, I can do something with that. And that's kind of how I that's my process. And sometimes I have to sit on it for a little bit, and then I go back, I return back to it, and then it just flows. And so that's always a good feeling. It doesn't happen all the time.
Right.
And sometimes if it's not moving, then I say, you know what, I'm going to move on to something else and revisit those, you know, themes later.
Right.
So that's pretty much how I work.
Okay. So if I'm hearing you, essentially you're not a big outliner, you're not a big planner. You basically sit down and start having the story come forth.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
Which is the way that I write too, but there are a lot of different, I mean, I have outlined stuff before just because sometimes the story dictates it, and there are times whenever the story's coming so fast that I feel like I have to jot down things that I don't want to forget.
Mm-hmm. Like, and I do that, especially if it's going to be a lot longer.
Yeah.
I do. I'm finding that's helpful, and I'll talk about that later when we get to that topic, that outlining my main points, because if I don't, I'm going to lose them, like you just explained so well. So, yes. I am finding that outlining is very can be very vital to helping you complete a story from beginning, middle, end.
Now, are you drawn to certain types of characters? I mean, I know that you don't just write horror; you write other genres as well.
Yes.
So, I mean, are there certain characters that you find yourself revisiting, or certain character types or archetypes that you're drawn to?
You know, Dan, I love everything. Just like, I kind of think of my writing as the music I listen to. I love listening to everything. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with my writing. It just kind of depends on where I'm at that moment. I will tell you that my first love and always will be horror and suspense. Mm-hmm. But I do love to branch out in different genres. It just kind of depends on where my head's at,
right,
honestly. But seriously, horror and suspense will always be my first love.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
What draws you to suspense and to horror?
Well, it kind of goes all the way back to my childhood. Man, I was kind of waiting for that question. you know, when I was younger, and I have to, you know, give my mom, again, give her props on this. You know, she watched scary movies, and so when she watched them, you know, I also did too, probably not all of them, and I would sneak and watch them. And, you know, I wasn't supposed to, but I tell you, those stories and the characters, you know, in the story, they just captivated me. Mm-hmm. And so I was just kind of like drawn in instantly, and it didn't take much for me at all. And after that, I tell you, I just always loved it. Now, I didn't write until I probably was like in junior high. I would just write like off and on, and mostly it would be just like, you know, lyrics and things like that from songs, things along that nature, or little poems. But I really, really didn't take my writing seriously until probably almost 3 years ago. I really didn't ever imagine I would go back to writing. But you know how you start doing something in your past and you just figured it was just, oh, that's what it was, you know, at that time. And I just never thought I would rediscover that writing is definitely my passion, and I love it.
Yeah.
You know, in life, things have to happen in order for you to figure out, you know, where you are now. Mm-hmm. So I really think a lot of things in my life happen in order to bring me to the place that I'm in right now. So big believer in that.
That's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So what are you working on these days? Are you working on novels, short stories, poems? What do you got going on?
Kind of working on a little bit of everything. I am working on a little novella, and it's called Doll. It's a story about three outcast teens who are tormented in high school by this really mean, nasty, popular girl, and they decide that they want to do something to make her kind of squirm a little bit. And so they decide to visit a witch, and a spell is cast, and it spirals out of control. And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I saw you sent me the book trailer.
Yes, I sent you like a little book trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and is that something that we can play in the show for folks to listen to?
You Excellent. Go right ahead. I'm still working on the story. Probably a little bit more than half and finished, but then it has to go through edits. That'll be my first standalone, so I'm excited about that. And then the other thing that I've been kind of having on the back burner is a collection, a pretty eclectic collection of short stories and, you know, I want to say poems, but I really call them mini stories. Mm-hmm. Because they tell a little something, you know, within them. And I've never been a rhyme girl. Always free verse. I'm very free verse, so that's why I don't label them as that. Someone may, someone else probably would, but that's kind of my little label that I use. But putting that all together, and it's titled Boundless, so I'm hoping that to be released before the end of the year as well. So just working and writing and tweaking and editing and all those fun things that goes with it.
It's all mm-hmm. different stages of the same process, and each one carries its own challenges.
I agree.
What do you find to be the most challenging for you when you're working through the process? Is it creation? Is it the editing? Is it the fine-tuning at the end?
I think for me, especially what I'm finding since I've been working on, you know, the doll is places when I feel like I'm getting stuck, and I need to figure out, okay, where am I going? What's going to be my next scene, and kind of ordering that. That's been my biggest challenge, trying to figure what's the next scene I need to pursue and ordering it where it's going to make sense.
Okay.
Because this is probably my biggest project because I've always done short stories. So this is kind of all new for me. So that's been my most challenging so far.
Gotcha. And where can folks find more of your work if they want to connect with you, if they want to say hello? Is there a place where they can go to find your books and find your work? And
yes, they can definitely go to my website, Dan, and that's www.miraclealstin.com. And I'm also on Twitter, and that's at Miracle Alston altogether, and 7, the number 7, and also on Facebook.
Awesome. And you've been published in some anthologies and that sort of thing before, yes?
Yes, I have. Uh-huh. I was shocked. So that was another thing. I was like, wow, you know, so I have been. And I've been very I feel very blessed to have had the opportunity to be published in those different anthologies, or e-zines or magazines. So mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's exciting. It is.
That's very cool.
Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome. Well, I told you it would be quick and painless, so that's pretty much it. I want to thank you again for letting us, you know, share your story again and do an encore of it. It's one of my favorite little stories. I definitely wanted to make sure that I picked that for our best of little mini series here. So thank you again.
Oh, Dan, you're so welcome, and I thank you. I thank you so much, and Nelson, for choosing my story and also just being moved by it, Dan, and just your words. They just mean so very much to me. Very enduring. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
So I look forward to reading more of your works and also reading works on Wicked Library and always promoting Wicked Library when I have the opportunity.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate that. And I guess what we'll do is we'll go ahead and close with your book trailer.
Okay. Wow. Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
Many would be too afraid to even whisper that Pepper Fox deserved every freaking thing she had coming to her. Her enemies swarmed the halls of Frost High and beyond. Everybody knew her worst victims were Tomi, Sari, and worst of all, Opal. Rumor has it they hooked up with a powerful witch to place a twisted spell on Pepper, just to give her a taste of her own medicine, but the spell spiraled out of control. Be careful what you wish for.
All works read in this recording and associated music and artwork are copyright of their respective creators and may not be used in any form without their permission. Dramatic reading performed by Nelson W. Piles. You remember that guy, right? The voice of the librarian was performed by Nelson W. Piles. The voice of Victoria Bigglesworth Hayes was performed by Amber Collins. The Wicked Library theme was written by Anthony Rousek and performed by Novus. All other music in this episode was performed by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com and used with his permission. The Wicked Library is a Ninth Story Studios production, NinthStory.com. Producer, Daniel Foytek. That's me. Program Director, Caitlin Marceau. Executive Producer and Creator, Nelson W. Piles. Full show notes with links and artwork can be found at www.thewickedlibrary.com/BS4-1. Until next time, this has been Daniel Foytek. Go ahead. Leave the lights on.
It makes it easier for the zombies to see where you are.
Music, talk, stories, politics. This is the Society 13 Podcast Network. Kettle Whistle Radio. Music, the Wicked Library, stories. Mouthing off. Progress. Politics. GBA with Mr. Pink. Talk. The Ninth Story. Music. Red Horse Radio. Politics. Society 13. Where bad... I can't say that. Where Naughty Donkeys listen to podcasts.
Society 13. Where Naughty Donkeys...